This is Geeks and Jocks. Welcome back to Geeks and Jocks, episode 113. Recording, May 3rd, 2022. This is Ryan Sullivan. Glad to have you listeners in for this episode. Before getting into this, the podcast is on anchor.fm. Also find us on Spotify, Radio Public, and Google Podcasts. So head on down to those places, search for Geeks and Jocks. Plenty of content awaits. So definitely got some stuff to talk about, including some movies. Talk about kind of the slow weekend altogether, and talk May the 4th, Star Wars, talk Avatar briefly, talk a couple other movie-related stuff. Talk about some television, which includes a number of Netflix droppings or cancellations, Wolfenstein 3D as far as video games go, and obviously the NFL draft and one or two other sports stuff here for this episode of Geeks and Jocks. I'd say we get cracking on the movies, if I'm being honest, because it was not the greatest weekend, but the numbers for the number one movie, the drop wasn't substantial, if I'm being completely honest. The Bad Guys stayed number one according to Box Office Mojo. So that kind of gives you an inkling that the weekend wasn't grand or anything. So altogether, The Bad Guys made just over $16 million. So a third drop compared to the $24 million in its opening weekend. Altogether, it's made $44 million domestically, $74 million internationally. So altogether, it's nearing $120 million. Kind of hard to gauge whether or not this movie will even get close to $80 million, which was the budget for the film. But still, to not have as big a drop, that's really good. I'm not kidding. And Sonic the Hedgehog 2 didn't have a huge drop either. Made over $11 plus million this past weekend, and its numbers altogether pretty even, just a little higher internationally, 162 plus mil internationally, domestically 161, 323 million worldwide. For a movie, I mean, the fact that there hasn't really been any family-friendly films, and the fact you have the adults that grew up on Sega Genesis and Sega stuff, you know, that are greatly enjoying Sonic the Hedgehog speaks dividends in why Sega is looking at doing other projects based on some of their properties. What's the next one? Where is it? Fantastic Beasts, number 3. Made over $8 million this past weekend, so obviously this is going to struggle to get to $100 million domestically. $79 million altogether here in the States, $252 million internationally, worldwide $332 million. Unless this has opened in just a few markets internationally, this movie obviously is going to be a complete failure no matter what, due to its budget and obviously the marketing and all this other stuff. This is probably going to be looked at as a failure. I think there are plans, from what I read, of trying to get the other films done. I don't know. Number 4 is The Northman, which made a little over $6 million. Over the weekend, altogether $22 million domestically, $19 million internationally, overall almost $42 million. Everything Everywhere All at Once, Looks like it's not having a huge drop, and actually I want to look at the total numbers. It actually had a small increase, according to Box Office Mojo. That is crazy. 2.2% increase in only 2,200 theaters. I think it was getting a nationwide release, or at least a wide release. Maybe it's not as wide as they wanted to say, but 5.5 million. That's pretty good for a movie that's been in theaters for almost a month and a half, and that's including the limited releases for a while. So 35 million altogether domestically, and add another 2.7 million to the mix internationally. Definitely going to be a film that keeps having some good legs during the month of May. I mean, to go from 6th to 5th, I mean, sure. Number 6, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, which is the new Nick Cage film. 3.8 million and altogether 13 million domestically, add another 2.5 mil internationally. Just, I think, like I said, Nick Cage really isn't all that appealing. It barely edged out The Lost City at number 7. A little over 3.8 million as well. And 90 million, that's better than what I thought this movie would have. And worldwide, 148 million. Not sure if this would be called a success or not, but given its budget, which was, I believe, somewhere between 68 to 74 million, according to the numbers. Yeah, I would say this movie did okay. Number 8, and this goes into something that I brought up a couple of months back. Memory. Made just over $3 million, and this is the only big wide release to come out, and it's from a small distributor, from the sounds of it, Open Road Films. It's Liam Neeson. And I mentioned this when Blacklight came out earlier this year. People are just getting tired of Liam Neeson. I don't think it's so much him that's the problem. I think it's the studios milking this cow so dry that there's no meat on the cow anymore. The appeal of him since Taken has obviously, I think, hurt his reputation as a whole. Maybe not so much for a good, like, 6-7 years after the first Taken movie came out, but since then, it's been a struggle, I think, for the actor. Just, I'm sure he gets a decent paycheck out of all this. I don't know if it's just his acting ability or not. I don't know if it's the script quality or something else. I'd like to know how bad some of these scripts are for the movies that he is in. Really, any of his movies over the last 4 or 5 years. I'm kind of curious. I'm genuinely curious. It's going to be another flop on Neeson's resume. At some point, he's got to probably start thinking, there's more to me than just Taken. The whole typecasting thing. And this guy's been acting for a very, very long time. I mean, he did Schindler's List, for goodness sake. And that was back in the early 90s. Sorry for the rant, but it just seems ridiculous. You know, just people keep milking on this Taken type stuff. Number 9, Father Stew, made a little over 2.2 million. So its total domestically is 17 million. Probably hasn't even, internationally, it only made $743. So I'm assuming this movie probably not going to have a lot of appeal internationally, unless it's hasn't made its way to other international markets yet. I probably don't think this movie is going to be anywhere close to the kind of success that I think Sony was anticipating. And number 10, Morbius at $1.5 million. So it's made its way to $71 million domestically and exactly $90 million internationally. So altogether, if I had to wager, either this movie is going to take a small loss or it did just enough to get through. But I don't know. Let's see what else is going on, because a lot of limited releases and only two wide releases over the next two weekends. I'm curious to see how Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness will do. Obviously, it's going to do very well, I think, just because it's a Marvel movie. But there's a couple factors that I'm thinking of. One, Mother's Day weekend. I can't imagine a lot of people going to the theater on Sunday because of Mother's Day, or maybe just the weekend in general. I think a lot of people will get their fix in, I think, on a Friday night. And that's not to say people won't go to see the movie on Saturday or Sunday, but doing it on a holiday release, well, not really a holiday per se, but Mother's Day is pretty much treated as a holiday. Same thing with Father's Day. A lot of people want to be with their mothers. But it definitely will have a big appeal. And the other big thing that I'll bring up is the drive-in. In my neck of the woods, starting to see some drive-ins open up and probably have some big and better improved numbers over the last 2 years, as we are definitely getting out of that phase of the pandemic and COVID's becoming less and less of a concern now. Granted, there might still be an issue here or there. I would imagine so in some parts of the country. But I would think things have laxed pretty well to where going to a drive-in would be pretty normal now. It would feel normal again. Although, to be fair, I haven't been to the drive-in myself in almost 6 years. I've only been to the drive-ins twice in almost 10 years. The last time was back in July of 2016, because I wanted to see Central Intelligence. Had to stomach through Finding Dory first, though, to watch that first, and then to watch what I really wanted to watch in Central Intelligence. Treated it like it was a grand event, actually. And that's actually happened the second to last time, going to see in 2012 Amazing Spider-Man and Ted. One of the best things. I mean, if you're not a fan of going to the concession stand, I mean, you can do this. I mean, make your own pizza or buy pizza somewhere. Get yourself some drinks. Get preferably soda or some water. And just relax and enjoy watching through the drive-in projection screen. As long as it don't rain, of course. But yeah, definitely be curious to see how it'll obviously do well, Doctor Strange, but the next big release after that is Firestarter, which is an adaptation of Stephen King book. I believe they tried doing something like this back in the 80s. I think Firestarter was around 84, because I know it sometimes appears on TV. While there definitely is an appeal towards Stephen King a little bit, let's see how something that isn't it does. But granted, with horror being huge for the most part over the last, I don't know, 5-6 years, maybe a little longer, being as, in terms of like getting bigger and bigger, maybe it's just a case of it doing much better, and maybe thinking it can stand out amongst the crowd. Now, even though it's May the 3rd, gotta talk May the 4th. And it's one of those things that tons of nerds would probably get a kick out of, especially with this turning 45, but the original Star Wars, A New Hope. I'm not sure anybody back in 77 would have expected this to be huge. And for a long time, it was one of the highest grossing movies ever, if not the highest grossing movie ever. Domestically, it shattered tons of records. I'm not going to go too deep in it because, quite frankly, I don't care for Star Wars, but I'm not going to deny its importance because, you know, you had a small, scrappy guy in George Lucas who had done films here and there, and for him to create what was basically an epic, you know, it wasn't just schlocky stuff. It wasn't just a dumb popcorn blockbuster. I mean, it had its, had a vision, you know, of, despite the sci-fi fantasy, in terms of story, its characters, the fights, everything in between. And when you think about it, I mean, it elevated what kind of films like that, that really give you the reason to go see a movie during the summer. And only elevated by its two sequels that came about in 1980 and 83 respectively. You rooted for the good guys. You wanted to see the bad guys fail. Memorable characters, both sides. Whether you care about Han Solo or Darth Vader, Princess Leia and Skywalker, and all of this other stuff. Yoda. And also just how big it became as a franchise in terms of merchandising and everything in between. Definitely milked, though. And I think the vision has been clouded, I would say, since Disney bought Star Wars from Lucas. You could argue probably the same thing with when Lucas tried to do his own trilogy of the episodes 1 through 3. Not the greatest quality, but I think a lot of people, I think a lot of people did enjoy the third one, Revenge of the Sith. But not a lot of people cared for Phantom Menace. Did well, but I think just because Star Wars was coming back. I mean, Star Wars had been relevant throughout the 80s and 90s, but in movie form, not so much. That's what I see out of it. So, I don't have a whole lot else really to say for Star Wars. Like I said, I'm not a, I don't watch that stuff. I do like some sci-fi, but I'm not fully into that. Although, I remember how crazy the numbers were for The Force Awakens. Just because you had three different generations of Star Wars fans that were probably eagerly anticipating this release when it came out back in 2017. And I feel like the value has been lost since. Although some of the stuff translating to television, which includes that Mandalorian show, it's been doing pretty well for the most part, at least from what I understand. Although I get the feeling Disney's going to try milking it, milking all this other Star Wars stuff for all it's worth. Same thing with the Marvel stuff. At least that's how I see it. So CinemaCon, I mean, there's been some stuff being shown at CinemaCon. But definitely we'll be talking about something very briefly for a brief second. And there's definitely, like, you know, some smaller films, some bigger stuff. One of the big ones being Avatar 2. Avatar, which came out back in Christmas time 2009, James Cameron's epic that did bigger than Titanic, which was the last film Cameron worked on. And that's not to say James Cameron didn't work on anything else. He worked on television for a while in the 90s and 2000s. it was big because it had a story of its own. There was a vision to James Cameron in the same way he had a vision for Terminator, like the first two Terminator movies, and Aliens, even though he didn't direct, no, he did direct them, excuse me, I'm sorry. Aliens, which people greatly enjoy. True Lies, you know, the directing vision of making Arnold Schwarzenegger kind of your James Bond type hero. And it got an official title. It's something involving water, which is pretty fitting. Yeah, Avatar, The Way of Water. The big thing that I could think of over the last couple of years is, I think, the record for someone holding their breath underwater, which was broken by Kate Winslet. So I'm sure she had a lot of practice, given that she was involved with acting in Titanic, even though that was many years ago. So some other stuff. Let's see. Looking at some stuff via Variety.com. Seems like they're not kind of pleased with Disney. I'm seeing some trailers for Lightyear, which is based on the lore of Buzz Lightyear and the reason why the toy exists. So, I don't know. This one actually kind of interests me a little bit, just because I think this is going to be a comedy. But Margot Robbie, I'm just going to say this, she has this ability to transition to any type of character. Whether it's doing Harley Quinn or Tanya Harding, Sharon Tate, for goodness sake. And this one caught my eye a little bit because I saw it on a forum. Barbie. Now, I'm not having any interest in seeing this movie because, being a guy, I'm not going to be interested in Barbie, but there's been some images shown of a look of her. And pretty good casting, if you want my take. It's supposed, probably going to be a comedy. If I had to wager, just because, it's got some comedians in it. It's got to be something a little outlandish, but probably works within like a Barbie universe. At least that's how I see it. Actually, Warner Brothers is showing some stuff. Prequel Wonka, Elvis. That's actually something I saw yesterday. There was a tweet from Priscilla Presley, who was Elvis's wife back in the 60s and 70s, and sounds like she approved of how the film went. Try to look at other stuff because I saw one last thing. Not really a whole lot else. I mean, just some stuff that's coming about, from other companies with, obviously the Top Gun film, and seen some trailers for a few other films, such as, I actually saw one for the new Puss in Boots sequel. But obviously one of the big things, as weird as this is for the movie Don't Worry, Darling, which is unfortunately probably taking, according to Variety, the highlight of the whole show. So it's being directed by Olivia Wilde. Harry Styles is in it, which I believe the two of them are dating, if I'm not mistaken. I might be wrong on that, but he's in it, as is Florence Pugh. And unfortunately, during the presentation, Wilde was served legal papers. Something to do with the two children that she had with comedian Jason Sudeikis. I'm kind of wondering what happened. It's not really something that I'll be honest, I don't know what the exact issue is that brought forth it, but obviously security issues and probably one or two other things. But to be served during an event, I mean, that's, if I'm being realistic, that's probably going to be embarrassing, because there's going to be people that will tell, you know, they see this with their kids, and it's like, you go to school with those two kids? Oh my goodness, look what happened to with their mother. I'm actually reading something like that regarding, I think it was on Variety as well, like, those kids are going to be scarred a little bit. No joke. But I'll tell you one thing that is pretty scarring, if I say so myself. Bringing up the whole Johnny Depp Amber Heard thing in regards to Aquaman. I've talked about this petition a couple of times over the deal with Aquaman 2. That was, I think, one of the things being seen at CinemaCon. Like, the movie doesn't come out until July, I think, of 2023. I want to double check on that. So, Aquaman 2, well, I should call it Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. Okay, not July, March of 2023. There's been so many movies that have been getting pushed back to certain days, getting pushed forward, that it's hard to really believe. But supposedly, Amber Heard's role as Mira in the sequel, supposedly 10 minutes of screen time. And the petition, which I should clarify from what I've seen on change.org, created by a woman. So, just to make that clear, this was created by a woman. I don't know what's gone on the last week or two, but it just sounds like the petition has gained traction. This petition to remove her from the movie, I'm assuming it was around close to 2 million, maybe just over it. And it has ballooned into 3 plus million at the time of this recording, nearing 3.2 million. So I don't know what the exact thing is going to happen with it as the trial keeps going on, and more people are showing that Heard is not exactly a shining beacon of the acting community. Warner Brothers and DC Comics can't keep ignoring this. They can't. At some point, they gotta address this. And I don't know what the, I get the feeling that Johnny Depp could win, but this is just me. Both sides are pretty bad. Though I would argue Heard is much, much more toxic. I mean, sure, insulting, name-calling, absolutely bad on Depp's part, but he didn't get his fingers. He was the one who didn't sever Heard's finger or get thrown stuff at by others, according to testimonies. I don't know what will happen next. But I think very obviously Heard's career could literally be going down the toilet. And I think it's going to be pretty hard. I think it's more than just Depp fans that want to see her removed. I think you got people who probably are comic book fans that don't want to support someone who fakes being abused that badly and tries to hide behind stuff such as Me Too and all this other crap and tries to paint this picture that she's the victim when she's not. The real victims are the people you don't read in the papers, the ones you don't see on television, because it gets harder for them to probably tell their story. And just to say this as well, men can get abused too. It may not be high like women, but it can happen. Let's not paint every woman as an angel, and let's not paint every guy as the devil and vice versa. Not every guy is innocent either. Not every woman's guilty. Role reverse that as well. Oh boy. Anyway, let's get into something else and talk some sports. Don't have a whole lot really to discuss other than talk of the NFL draft and one or two other things. To see the second round underway for the NBA. This is coming off of a big win for the Golden State Warriors on Sunday, beating the Memphis Grizzlies to take game one. Milwaukee Bucks showing their worth, taking game one against the Boston Celtics. Miami Heat, always a title contender, convincing win against Philadelphia, and Phoenix edging out Dallas to win game one. So the Jazz got eliminated, the Pelicans got eliminated, Raptors, the Denver Nuggets, Bulls, Minnesota Timberwolves, and I couldn't believe this particular set of stuff. Now, I don't know how intellectual Bill Simmons is. This guy's got to be one of the dumbest people, because this guy is from Massachusetts, so you can kind of get where I'm going to go with this. He is a Boston homer. And Alex Rodriguez is now an owner of the Minnesota Timberwolves. And he put out a tweet about no MLB team being down 3-0 to come back and win until A-Rod joined the Yankees. Which, yeah, but at the same time, there's more to the Yankees than just A-Rod. And then trying to compare that to the Timberwolves blowing 3 double-digit fourth-quarter leads. They never did anything like that until Rodriguez became the owner of the team. I think it's just some Boston idiot trying to be aha and trying to make Rodriguez look like a complete fool, when I personally think Simmons is looking like the fool himself. There's more to a team than just ownership. You got GM issues that are dealt with any team, regardless of sport. You got a coach. If that coaching style doesn't mesh with the players, and if it doesn't translate to playoff success or even championships, they're gone after a couple of years, or maybe longer, or shorter. If a player's a headache for the team, they could get rid of him. There's a lot more to it, and I think Simmons is just being stupid. And this is coming off the heels of a tweet regarding this Jalen Green guy that plays for the Houston Rockets, who had a pretty good rookie year. And unfortunately for being on the Houston Rockets, unfortunately you're on you're on a team that went 20-62. And to get ripped by Draymond Green, which is, it has something to do with, I'm trying to find the right words for it, but it's something about not being on a contender and all this crap that, what are you trying to do, Simmons? There's probably a number of players over the years, good teams or bad, that get Rookie of the Year awards. Doesn't matter whether they're a playoff contender or not. You know, I like to look at NFL Rookie of the Years, because I would love Rookie of the Year history, because they do it for both offense and defense. So let's see. We're going to look at something like, trying to look for like someone like Otis Anderson. Not exactly a great contender, the St. Louis Cardinals was. Same with George Rogers. I mean, being on the New Orleans Saints, pretty mediocre franchise in 81. Actually, let's take a look at their standings. Regular season. Let's see how they fared. Yeah, 4-12, Rookie of the Year. Let's see. Louis Lips. Let's see how the Pittsburgh Steelers did, because that was when Pittsburgh, okay, 9-7. Okay. I was kind of expecting worse because I know there was a point where they kind of struggled a bit. Okay, Reuben Mays of the New Orleans Saints. Let's take a look. 7-9. Still kind of but not great. John Stevens. Let's take a look at that, because there was a point where, okay, Patriots did okay. That's Barry Sanders, mediocre team at that point in 89. Let's take a look. 7-9. Another points where the team really suffered. Carl Pickens, bad team in 92. Jerome Bettis, 93. So the point being that I'm going to bring up is that Curtis Martin, 5-11, Patriot team in 95. Point being is, probably have contender or not, a guy like Bill Simmons should not be in charge of doing voting or anything of that matter. This is just some outdated guy who doesn't like that some guy is getting accolades. Well, guess what? There is that case for tons of teams in every sport. There are going to be players that are going to play day in and day out in the NBA, in NHL, MLB for that matter, and on a weekly basis for the NFL, regardless of their record. Just, it's so stupid. So freaking stupid. How this guy still exists, I don't know. This is a guy in his 50s that probably has no clue what's going on outside of his own bubble. Speaking of being in their own bubble, how about a delay at Dover? So the race at Dover ended yesterday. Chase Elliott won. And it gets his first win of the year, so all 400 guys have a win altogether. So they're top 10 altogether for the race. Ricky Stenhouse finishing second. Ross Chastain third, still doing pretty well for the year. Christopher Bell, 4. Fifth place, Alex Bowman. Kyle Larson, 6. Kyle Busch, 7th. Chris Buescher, pretty good 8th place finish. Kevin Harvick, 9th. And Eric Jones finding his way into the 10th spot. Other notables include Martin Truex Jr., 12th. Bubba Wallace, 16th. Michael McDowell, 17th. Eric Almirola, 19th. Brad Keselowski, 20th. 21st is Denny Hamlin. William Byron, 22nd. Austin Dillon, 23rd. Harrison Burton, 24th. Ryan Blaney, 26th. Joey Logano, 29th. Tyler Reddick, 30th. Kurt Busch, 31st. And really the only notable DNF is the part-time of A.J. Allmendinger, 33. Oh, dead last, Austin Cindric. Because he does have a win under his belt this year. Pretty bad finish. Let's take a look at the NASCAR standings, because should be interesting to see how big of a points difference it is now, considering that Chase Elliott is 50 points ahead of Ryan Blaney. That's the difference between first and second. William Byron not too far off, 15-point difference between him and Blaney. Tied with Kyle Busch for third and fourth. Alex Bowman, fifth. Chastain, sixth. Martin Truex, seventh. Larson, 8th. Logano, 9th. And Bell, 10th. Trying to think who... Harvick's not too far off. He's only 4 points behind Bell for 10th. Almirola is a point behind Bell as well. Let's take a look at some NFL drafts. Let's see, NFL draft first round. First round, 2022. I'm only going to take a look at the first round for the most part, and that's about it. So let's take a look. Just trying to find it, because one of the big things... Where the heck... I just want to look at the first round for the most part. But the Jaguars didn't go for Aiden Hutchinson, that's for sure. I just want to find the... Where are you? Just want to find the list. Seriously. Just trying to find it. So, Trayvon Walker for the Jaguars. Definitely need a guy defensively. Hutchinson to Detroit, second overall. Definitely need to work on that defense for sure, but definitely concerned about their offense a little bit. Particularly, I would say altogether their skill set players and their quarterback situation. Houston Texans, Derek Stingley, corner. I don't know. I mean, there's definitely a lot of spots they need to improve in. New York Jets, Ahmad Gardner, corner. They definitely need someone there. They definitely need to work on the defense. There probably is enough stuff offensively to make them do well, but I don't know. New York Giants, 5th overall, Kayvon Thibodeau, defensive end. Definitely need some big defensive guys. Definitely needs some good edge rushing. Carolina Panthers, Ikem Ekwonu, offensive tackle. Sure, definitely need to work on the offense a little bit, protect some of their guys, and get some blocking in if Christian McCaffrey can be healthy. Seventh, Giants again, Evan Neal. Definitely need to help Daniel Jones a little bit. And this is coming off of them not, according to ESPN, not picking up the fifth-year option for Daniel Jones. So this is going to be a make-or-break year. Someone's going to be under center at some point in the future. Whether or not that's Jones, I don't know. Atlanta Falcons, Drake London. I mean, yeah, pretty obvious. You need someone, especially when you don't have Calvin Ridley anymore. Seattle Seahawks, Charles Cross. They definitely could use some offensive line help, especially when you don't have someone like Russell Wilson anymore. New York Jets, Garrett Wilson. Sure, and an extra weapon for Zach Wilson. There's some good players that can produce some good stats for the Jets. Can he do well, though? New Orleans Saints, Chris Olave. Sure. I mean, they need people. That offense really struggled. Wow. Finished 32nd in the league in passing offense. They gave up a couple draft picks to go from 16 to 11. Detroit Lions, Jameson Williams. Yeah, work on your offensive needs and defensive needs in the first round. Philadelphia, Jordan Davis. Yeah, Philadelphia's defense is, yeah, pretty underwhelming, especially when you get blown out your last game of the season and get blown out in the playoffs against Tampa. Baltimore Ravens at 14, Kyle Hamilton, safety. Kind of curious, but definitely I think they want to avoid the injury bug and getting some young, fresh talent in there to work with the veterans. Not sure if they should have gone with him or maybe a running back. But Houston Texans, Kenyon Green, 15th overall. Definitely need to work on that offensive line, that's for sure. Give Davis Mills time to be a pretty good player. He looked okay last year, Mills, so getting some more protection will definitely help. Let's see what happens. Jahan Dotson for the Washington Commanders. It's going to be interesting because there's some players there. It's just a matter of who they can have at quarterback. That's the one thing I'd be concerned about. L.A. Chargers at 17th. Zion Johnson, a guard. They definitely need to, if they definitely want to keep Justin Herbert as healthy as possible, definitely be good. Tennessee Titans, Treylon Burks. By the way, these draft picks that I'm looking at via ESPN.com. This is coming off the heels of the Philadelphia Eagles trading with the Titans to get A.J. Brown. And this is, I'll get to that in a minute, but definitely need to get a good player there for the Titans to keep Ryan Tannehill having some good talent. Saving upwards of $20 million, according to this article. I think he wanted $20+ million, and definitely a good receiver, but not 25. The extension I believe he got with Philadelphia was 4 years, $100 million. He's a good receiver, but not $25 million a year good, especially for a young guy like him. Saints at 19, Trevor Penning. Obviously, trying to beef up their offensive line. Definitely need to protect their guys. Pittsburgh Steelers, Kenny Pickett. Actually, a guy out of Pittsburgh. Local college. Why not? And definitely we'll have to keep eye on that. This is coming off the heels of last month's unfortunate passing of Dwayne Haskins, to see how he fares in with Mason Rudolph and Mitch Trubisky. Maybe just a transition type of scenario where they'll probably groom up Pickett, and to see how Rudolph and Trubisky test the waters. Not sure they'll rush him in like what happened with Trubisky in Chicago, but I see him sitting. I see him sitting at least. 21st, Kansas City Chiefs, Trent McDuffie, corner. Well, I feel like the defense is one of the problems with Kansas City. Just seems like there's some issue, depends on the year. Sometimes their front part of their defense is pretty good, and then the secondary isn't, and vice versa. Good on them. Green Bay Packers, Quay Walker, or K. Walker. So, I don't know. Keep that defense young and fresh, I guess. Buffalo Bills, Kerr Elam, corner. I don't know. I'm just an amateur on this draft stuff, so I don't know the full extent of what what these teams need, but definitely need some good guys, especially when seeing how they fared in the playoffs against the Chiefs this past season. Although I definitely would be a little concerned about the run game a little bit. Tyler Smith for the Dallas Cowboys, offensive tackle. Definitely need to find their ways to get back to that elite front that they had for a good 4 or 5 years. I mean, keep finding ways to protect Dak Prescott and find those holes for Ezekiel Elliott. Baltimore Ravens at 25, Tyler Linderbaum, center. Sure, I guess. I mean, you got a pretty good run game that, if they can be fully healthy for this upcoming season, can do many things together and make sure that Lamar Jackson's protected as well. First center drafted by the Ravens in the first round in their 27-year history. So that's one of the big things. They traded Marquise Brown to Arizona. Arizona gets themselves a decent receiver for the most part, and yeah, find ways to improve their team. Jermaine Johnson the second for the Jets, defensive end. Keep working on that defense. If the Jets want to be contenders, they got to fill out some of the holes. Jacksonville at 27, Devin Lloyd. They got some good talent on offense, so that's probably why they're focusing so much on the defense. I mean, if this team wants to be a contender, they got to fill in the needs of Trevor Lawrence on offense and make sure the defense can garner up some sacks, create some turnovers, get the interceptions at the critical moments. 28, Green Bay, Devontae Wyatt, defensive tackle. I don't know what to tell you, but if the defense is the key to winning the championship, then Green Bay's got it covered. Definitely would have my concerns a little bit, though, with how the offense will be. The receivers in particular, and I would argue even the run game. New England, Cole Strange, guard. Well, protect Mac Jones any way you can, I guess. They traded out at 21. Kansas City Chiefs, 30th, George Karlaftis, defensive end. Once again, trying to work on that defense. Is it going to be good enough, though? Daxon Hill for the Cincinnati Bengals, Michigan, out of Michigan. A number of these guys coming out of places like Purdue, Georgia, LSU, what have you. Well, get themselves some ways to improve on that defense. And 32nd, Minnesota, Lewis Cine, or Kine, C-I-N-E, a safety. Definitely need to work on that defense, that's for sure. Definitely some interesting choices, that's for sure. And last thing I'll bring up is the NHL. So I had a quick look because the playoffs just began yesterday. And the difference between years since all 16 teams' last championship, last series win, excuse me. So it starts at the top with Tampa Bay Lightning. They've won the last two Stanley Cups. And there's been a number of these teams that, for the most part, have found their ways to winning playoff series over the last decade. Whether it's Minnesota in 2015, the Rangers in 2017. But probably the most shocking thing is that the Florida Panthers, they have not won a series since 1996. I actually want to look at that pro hockey reference. I am genuinely curious because the Panthers have been around for a good number of years. They won the division. That is crazy. I want to look at their franchise history. Because they've done okay at points. Let's see. Lost in the conference quarterfinal. So they've been playing since the 93-94 season. In their 28 seasons, they've only been in the playoffs 8 times. They've been in the playoffs 3 straight years, and that's including this year. The team has had its share of struggles. They've had some winning seasons here and there, but otherwise nothing too great. Their first season actually wasn't all that bad. It had 33 wins, 34 losses, 17 ties, 83 points. That's pretty decent. Just looking at it all together. But yeah, they haven't won a playoff series since the 96 Eastern Conference Finals when they went to the Stanley Cup. Well, if it's ever time to break that curse, better late than ever. So, as far as television goes, as we move on to that, I mentioned about Netflix losing subscribers, and they are definitely dropping shows and canceling a number of stuff. And this one's making headlines a little bit. Pearl, which is a show created by Meghan Markle. And this is part of a company that she and Prince Harry created. And I don't think it's even been put on the air. It seems like a number of their projects are struggling. Pulling back, according to Spencer Newman, this is from CNBC.com. Pulling back some of its spending on films and TV shows to help revenue growth. There's a few other ones as well. I mean, huge subscriber loss. Yeah, that's no cakewalk. Looking at Tech Radar, just trying to find. They let go of someone involved in animation. Just looking for anything else. But the other big thing that I could find is Space Force, which is the Greg Daniels, Steve Carell show. So, came out with their second season a couple months back. Looked like it struggled mightily in its 2 months. So that should kind of give you somewhat of a hint that maybe just it was just a bad concept, but Netflix bought in on it because of Greg Daniels and Steve Carell's reputations. Daniels has been around in television for such a long time when you think about working on The Simpsons or helping Mike Judge create King of the Hill, and obviously for what he did for NBC with The Office and Parks and Recreation. I actually got somebody from Parks and Recreation to be on that show, according to Deadline. Ben Schwartz played a cameo guest star type role. Just sounds like the viewership was just really bad. So that says quite a bit. Clearly influenced by the Trump administration's Space Force creation. I mean, obviously he's going to keep working on other stuff. Wow. Bad Crimes and Exploding Kittens. What is that? Now I'm actually pretty curious. Okay. Dark comedy. Greg Daniels and Mike Judge. That's actually pretty good. The main creator is Nicole Silverberg. That's actually pretty interesting. I mean, Daniels has always had some form of success with animation. They co-created King of the Hill together, obviously. That's actually pretty. I mean, they're getting people involved that worked on cartoons. Work on adult cartoons. That's actually pretty nice. I mean, they're going to find work somewhere else. No joke. What was that other... I'm pretty curious about the Exploding Kittens thing. Like, seriously. Exploding Kittens TV show. I'm actually Netflix announcing mobile game and animated series. It's so surreal that I feel like this Exploding Kittens came about. What was it? Like 6-7 years ago? Yeah, since its inception in 2015, according to DailyHive.com. That is crazy. It's going to be an animated show. So we got some interesting choices here. Tom Ellis, Abraham Lim, Lucy Liu, Ellie Mackey, Mark Proksch, and Shashir Zamata. So, being produced by Judge and Daniels, that's pretty obvious. Not sure I call The Office a cult favorite, but them be them, I guess. But regardless, that is interesting. And this is an article from a couple weeks ago. I heard about this back when it was new, Exploding Kittens, the card game. I didn't think it would get that huge. Maybe it's sort of that sort of thing like Cards Against Humanity, I guess. At least that's how I see it. Really, the only other thing that I could think of is... I was looking at a Screen Rant thing and talking about the first images of That 90s Show, which is the spinoff of That 70s Show. And the fact that they brought up in this article, brought up in the article, was that they're going to bring back a number of the kids from the original show's run. So that actually would be pretty cool to see as far as cameos go, but it's still something that, and I kind of agree with my brother a little bit, it's too little too late. I mean, just 10 episode run according to the article, but I don't know, it just could be just blatant cash grab for all I know, but at the same time, it'll probably feel like a love letter to the original show's run, and wondering who is involved as far as, like, creating the show and all that. If it's the Turners, Bonnie and Terry Turner, might be special, considering that they did pretty well as far as working on stuff in the 90s. But the fact they're bringing almost all the kids from the original show's run, that's pretty cool. Just have to see what happens next. So lastly, a couple video game stuff. Beginning with Sonic the Hedgehog. So Sonic Origins got announced not too long ago, and Sega is putting it out June 23rd. In the midst of it, Sega is also delisting some games. So they're delisting some games that are on Steam, PlayStation 3, and Xbox 360. Sonic delisting. So this was announced during a the press release from Sega, looking at this via sonicstadium.org. So specifically, every individually released version of Sonic 1, 2, 3, Sonic & Knuckles, and Sonic CD are all getting delisted from Steam, Xbox, PlayStation 3, and PlayStation Now. The Sega Ages releases of Sonic 1 and 2 on Switch will remain, as will Sonic 1, 2, and CD on iOS and Android. The 3DS releases have yet to be specified, but with that digital service ending next year, they likely aren't bothering with it. So, we are at that point where we're starting to see more and more games get delisted. And as far as stuff on the 360 and PS3, I don't think it's a huge loss for the PS3 in particular, because Sonic 1 and 2, I mean, you can play those on Sonic's Ultimate Genesis Collection. And same thing with the 360 versions. Steam, I don't, I mean, Steam definitely kind of sucks with that as well, but it's not like the collections disappear for good. Although, not sure how that works with Steam. Sonic CD is the biggest loss, in my opinion, because there hasn't been a physical release of the game since 2005 with the GameCube version of Sonic Gems Collection. It's the only version that came out in America. So, and I think the game goes for a pretty high price now these days. But I digress. Sonic 3 & Knuckles definitely is kind of bad, because the 360, it's only on the 360 that I'm really concerned about, although the Steam version is concerning too, because Sonic 3 & Knuckles, you could actually play Sonic 3 or Sonic & Knuckles, or combine them into the full game, or do Sonic 2 with Sonic & Knuckles if you bought Sonic 2. It does suck that it's going to get delisted. I believe the date will be for the 19th of May. So, not too long left. About another 2+ weeks. But at the same time, this is something that's inevitably going to happen with the 360 and PS3, is that their storefronts are going to get shut down. Nintendo is shutting down their 3DS and Wii U eShops this upcoming March of 2023. And obviously the PSP store has been shut down for a number of years, DS as well. The Wii for over three years, excuse me. It's going to happen, and honestly, the thing that kind of irks me a little bit is, you know, it's not like the games are going to be, how many people are legitimately going to go out of their way to buy the 360 and PS3 versions? It's not like those games are going to be bought by the pound, especially with these games that are for the Origins collection. They're going to be revamped versions that have widescreen and all this extra content, something that the console versions don't have, with the exception of Sonic CD. So obviously, Sonic 1, 2, 3, and Knuckles and CD are going to get re-releases on Steam. And from the articles that I've read, they're going to have the original modes and the anniversary modes. So for people that want to play like it was 1993 on the Sega CD, they're going to get that wish, because the original version of Sonic CD did come out to Windows 95 back in 96. I do have a copy that confirms that. As far as the original release on the PC. So to be able to play that will be pretty nice. At the same time as well, Sonic, you know, get the anniversary modes, will, especially to get the iOS and Android type versions of Sonic 1 and 2, be nice for console gamers and PC people without having to modify their computers or not have to mess with phone features to get Sonic or Tails or Knuckles to move. Not great, but there's definitely some positives here and there. Not the greatest positives, but they're still positive. And lastly, May the 5th. May the 5th, 1992. id Software releasing a game that definitely changed how we viewed gaming a little bit. And that game in particular is Wolfenstein 3D. Now, the series has been around since 1981, but if you want to go with the id iterations, it's been around for 30. And it's one of the biggest game changers for the industry, because it, while not the first of its kind, it was the game that really got people into the first-person shooter. And it was centered around a character named B.J. Blazkowicz, who was a spy for the Allies during World War II, got himself captured trying to find plans of nefarious reasons that the Nazis have, and has to fight his way through hordes of bad guys in order to stop the operation and stop any other nefarious acts of the Germans. It was just the amount of freedom that you could move around in an environment, graphics that were really impressive for 1992, the gunplay and everything in between, the design, the secrets. I mean, I played the first episode a lot way back in 96, 97, and now these days, playing that first episode, I can just blow through it probably within a half hour tops. Probably be a lot quicker with Actually, I might be thinking about the easier difficulties, but still, the difficulties, the audio, all of it really, I mean, just the type of engine that John Carmack was creating for this, which they took a couple tries. There was a game called Hover Tank, which is pretty rudimentary and extremely basic by today's standards. And there was also the Catacomb Abyss, which had a style similar to Wolfenstein and many other stuff. It's kind of the forgotten game, Wolfenstein 3D, because a year and a half later, Doom comes out and changes the landscape of first-person shooters, and now everybody at that time starts trying to create their own Doom game. Wolfenstein has seen its share of success throughout the 90s and 2000s and in recent time with the machine games stuff. It's been the original 3D has been ported to a number of systems, including the 3DO, which actually is a really good port. If you ever want to play a 3DO game, give Wolfenstein 3D a go. I would say one of the must-haves for that system. It's the type of game that should have came out early in that system's lifespan. I've seen the videos of the Jaguar and Super Nintendo versions, and the Jaguar version seems like it would play okay. It plays a little fundamentally different in terms of health and no scoring and stuff like that. Super Nintendo version, outside of the obvious censorship, looks like it would play okay, though the graphics are pretty poor. There's the Game Boy Advance version, which I have played via emulator and fumbled pretty badly. It's not a horrible game, but port-wise, not all that great. I mean, the original version, I would say, I mean, your biggest issues are going to be the audio not being as great and getting lost pretty easily due to the simplistic of the graphics and a few other things. Labyrinth-type mazes to get through some of these levels. Some of the later levels in the sixth episode are pretty bad. Regardless, as far as the other games go, Return of Wolfenstein, I've only played a little bit, and that was a couple of years ago. Kind of fun. Definitely need to play more of it, though. The 09 Wolfenstein, I thought the single player was pretty good. I think the only game that could be just as equal or better than 3D is the New Order. To play that a bit, kind of when it was relatively new, was pretty interesting. And playing it a few years later, definitely got a great appreciation for it, for what it was trying to do. I love the gunplay. The graphics were really good for a very early new-gen game. Not to use it on the audio, but it had a wow factor that I think isn't replicated in the sequels. They're still good games, but New Order just has a little extra oomph in it. Oh, I forgot about the prequel, Spirit of Destiny, which came out only 4 months after Wolfenstein 3D. And that game's okay. It's got some interesting gameplay design. Brutal, though. Very brutal. But yeah, 30 years of id Software Wolfenstein. One of the most important games for computers, which helped, I think, PC gaming be more than just point-and-click games and role-playing type stuff, even though it was gradually getting more and more games that weren't those types. So yeah, that about wraps up this episode here. As I said before, this podcast is on Anchor.fm. You can also find us on Spotify, Radio Public, and Google Podcasts. So head on down those places, search for Geeks and Jocks. Plenty of content awaits. So with that, episode 113 in the books. This is Ryan Sullivan. Hope to hear your listeners on the next podcast. Stay safe, stay protected, take care of yourself, take care, everyone.